Support for this program is brought to you by listeners like you. Thank you.
The Local Thread.
Welcome back to La Prensa Habla. I am Dr. Linda Alvarado Atze.
And I am Jessica Molina.
And we are here today with Dr. Pat, with Dr. Serving the Latinx Community.
And Dr. Pat, for those who know, he's constantly working with students next to him or community members next to him. So Dr. Pat brought Athir Ammer as well. Welcome. We'd love to have you two introduce yourselves to our viewers, our listeners who don't yet know you personally. So, you know, as much as you're comfortable sharing about yourselves, Dr. Pat, you want to go ahead?
Sure. My name is Dr. Richard Pat. I'm internal medicine. I'm with Mercy Internal Medicine and also I'm a professor of clinical medicine at University of Toledo College of Medicine. Oh. I moved out here when I was in first grade. My parents are Filipino, and I was raised here in Toledo, went to St. John's, went to Ohio State, did my medical school here in Toledo, graduating in 1986. Then I did my residency at Akron City Hospital SUMA program and came back and started practicing medicine here initially with my father in 1989. So I've been in this community for a long time.
And your father was the same type of physician?
My father was family physician.
Oh,
yes. I'm internal medicine.
Oh, nice.
Did your parents immigrate here or were they also born and raised here as well?
They immigrated here. They're both Filipino. And my mom's a nurse and my father was training in surgery, and he did his training here, then moved back to the Philippines, and then came here when I was in first grade in 1966, came back.
Wow. Did you ever consider something other than medicine? It sounds like medicine's like deeply rooted in your family.
If I wasn't a physician, I'd probably be teaching high school history.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Nice. So do you speak Spanish? The Philippines was colonized by the Spaniards, and a lot of last names and a lot of words are in Spanish.
A lot of the traditions, a lot of the foods are Spanish origin. But one of the things that the Spaniards never did was they never brought Spanish in as a unifying language. There are 7,700 islands in the Philippines, and unfortunately that never happened. But through my work, through our mission teams in Honduras and Guatemala, now spanning 26 years, and with the migrant community, working with FLOC and working in the Latino community here, I can get by, but I'm still not fluent, unfortunately.
Oh, okay. I love Filipino food. I love food, but I like that they have a lot of adobo in the food. That's why,
yes.
And you know, we also use that spice.
And Athir, can you tell us about yourself, too? How did you connect with Dr. Pat? What's your story?
So my name's Athir Ammer. I'm originally from Cleveland. I went to the University of Toledo for undergrad, and I'm a first-year medical student currently at the University of Toledo. My family is originally Palestinian. Mm-hmm. They came here in their teens and early 20s, and I'm very passionate about the culture, advocating for them, as we know what's going on over there right now. And I met Dr. Pat through Students for Medical Missions, which is an organization through the College of Medicine and Life Sciences, and we go to different countries and places that are underserved and kind of need more help through their medical care.
So have you thought to go back to Palestine with...
That's one of my goals, is hopefully working with Doctors Without Borders and going over to Palestine. Now, obviously, it's not safe, but I would definitely want to go back because I haven't gone back in over 10 years either way. So I would want to go back medically to help as well.
And how long until you graduate?
I graduated in 2029, so it'll be a long way.
Quite a commitment.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, for both of you, really, what made you first want to integrate medicine and mission work? You know, because you can be a doctor and not have that underserved focus, or, you know, you do things locally, nationally, internationally. So what made you take your work there?
The opportunity was always there. You know, working as a physician, it's not just treating the patients that have insurance and everything else, but my parents would bring us back to the Philippines, and My dad would take me on rounds, house calls, and in the other areas, South Toledo, and so we'd see a mishmash of different cultures and different opportunities. And the opportunity was there to serve all people, especially people that needed more medical services. Mm-hmm. And so I just took advantage of it and started building a community of students and doctors that are all passionate about doing the same thing. We started the Community Care Free Medical Clinic because of that in 2010. And Athea is one of the clinic directors at St. Peter and Paul. Serves the Latino population there mm-hmm. two Sundays a month. Mm-hmm. And eventually, there's no plans in the work, but we became the largest student-run free medical clinic in the United States now. We take care of 4,000 patients wow. here in the Toledo area. Through our international medical work, we've probably led about 105 medical teams now mm-hmm. around the world. We bring teams into Honduras. We'll be there in April. This will be our 26th annual medical mission. We just came back from Guatemala mm-hmm. In January. Athea was with our team at that time. That was our 26th mission.
Wow.
We work with Baltimore Velasquez and Flock. We serve the migrant communities here. One thing led to another during the COVID pandemic.
Yes, one thing did lead to another.
We were at Escuela Smart and serving the Latino population with COVID vaccines. And
yeah, that was such a special time, I think, in my life, maybe yours too, but maybe you're more accustomed to it. But at the time, when COVID was just came, you didn't know. Every time you went outside, you thought you were going to die. Mm-hmm. And here we are putting on clinics at the school, at mm-hmm. Flock, just to encourage people to come and get the vaccine. We had I had no idea, what risk I was putting myself at. Maybe you had a better understanding. I'm not sure, but here we are. We put on a vaccine-a-thon. I still have the t-shirt. We gave vaccines for 24 hours straight?
The full weekend. It was like 72 hours.
We had people sleeping in classrooms. That was just such an amazing time. But it makes me think, you do a lot of work in South Toledo. It's not just at the church, is it? Do you also do homeless clinics nearby?
At our Community Care Free Medical Clinic, our home base is at Cedar Creek Church on Byrne Road. So we're there every Thursday evening. And then we have a number of outreach clinics. So every Monday, we're at Queen of Apostles parking lot and at St. Louis Helping Hands. And we're set up in the parking lots out there. When it's wintertime, we have tents out there and propane heaters. And it's a full medical team. So doctors, nurses, medical students, other healthcare students. We have a full pharmacy. Everything's totally free. We take care of everything and anything coming in. Mm-hmm. A large Latino population in the South End that we serve there. And then we are at St. Peter and Paul the second and fourth Sundays of the month after the noon mass. We work with Father Molino and the population there. And again, we provide all our services for free. It's a full clinic. And we actually set up in the back of the church and examine patients on the benches. And then two Tuesday mornings a month, the first and third, we're at St. Martin de Porres. And that's a homeless population. Mm-hmm. So they have a feeding program there run by Sister Ginny.
Yep, and Sister Virginia Welsh.
Yes. And so we're there, and we serve the homeless population. We were there yesterday morning. Am I missing anything?
Not at all, no.
We have pop-up clinics that different organizations ask us to bring in healthcare teams, so we'll do that. We run Tent City for the Homeless every October. Mm-hmm. We've been doing that for a number of years. In the past, we've always brought our teams out into the migrant worker mm-hmm. clinics.
And who funds all of this?
Our students do a great job of fundraising.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a nonprofit organization called Community Care Free Medical Clinic. And, it's something that I've never really worried about. It just kind of shows up. Mm-hmm. So the students run, we had med ball recently, we have golf drives. And people that find out about us, other people in the community will donate to mm-hmm. us and to buy the medications and supplies that we need. But everybody else is a volunteer. We have one security person at the church, but that's our only cost.
About how many students are involved in this?
there's hundreds. So many students just love the opportunity to not only apply their clinical skills, because a lot of it is just classroom based. Mm-hmm. So they definitely try to get out there and improve their skills, learn more about the clinical aspect of medicine, but they're also so passionate about serving the community, helping the underserved. Mm-hmm. So I would say, what do you think? Like, over
each medical school class has 150?
175,
and probably a good 90% of all those students. And we're also multidisciplinary, so we have nursing students, we have physician assistant students, we have physical therapy, occupational therapy, and pharmacy students. That's a great thing about the team and about our missions. We work as a collaborative group, and everybody contributes to the care of the patient.
At UT, are most of the med students kind of like humanitarian focused in this way, or is the work that you do a smaller cohort of the larger med student population?
I would say it's a smaller cohort, but from what I've noticed, a lot of my classmates are really oriented in that way of serving the populations and the community of Toledo, but we are a smaller subset. I think about 40 students went on the last mission, but we're really trying to expand the organization and, you know, make sure that we know as future physicians that our main goal is to not only serve our community, but globally and internationally as well.
There used to be a program at the university at the Health Service Campus, is that correct?
Health Sciences Campus.
The Health Sciences, the name keeps changing. I'm not going to keep track of it. That a lot of the med students were to take a course that would help them to become more like culturally sensitive, more aware of the different populations over there. Does that not exist, or are there class, or is this part of some classes as well?
I'm faculty advisor for the two largest service organizations there, so Community Care Free Medical Clinic and also Students for Medical Missions. The Community Care Clinic serves the local population, and the Students for Medical Missions serves the international population. Mm. The students also have the ability to take a Spanish language class so that they're more comfortable serving the Spanish-speaking population as well.
And do students take advantage of that?
They do. There's a lot of people in my class that have chosen to take that. I also want to mention there's now a new program centered around health disparities. Mm-hmm. So they select a number of students each year to participate in that and kind of learn how to address those disparities and determinants of health in their community and beyond. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of opportunities to be engaged with diverse populations for sure. Mm-hmm.
How do you address, like, some of the religious differences?
Right. So I think the most important thing is just being open to everyone and everyone's religion and respecting what they choose to believe, because at the end of the day, we're all human. So it doesn't matter what exactly we believe in, as long as we are kind people. That's the most important part.
It's beautiful.
Thank you.
Beautiful.
I would imagine that this is very taxing work, right? Very, very hard. We were just talking about staying up for 48 hours straight. So how do you how do you keep doing it year after year?
It's something that's I've developed, you know, as during our training, you don't get much sleep to begin with during the residency, and that's kind of carried on. And when I first was in private practice, it's wherever the patients would go, going to different hospitals, nursing homes, and running a full-time practice. But, you know, as the need developed and we saw the need to develop free clinics and our international mission work, I just say that you find the time to do whatever you feel passionate about. Mm-hmm. It's not that there's not enough time. There's just probably a little less sleep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what about you, Athir? How, going into this work, how do you stay composed through it all?
Right. So I would say as a medical student now, my sleep schedule is destroyed. So honestly, just as Dr. Pat was saying, any time you have a passion for something, you're going to do anything possible in order to achieve those goals and help your community. So honestly, for me, it's just keeping that passion in my mind and my need to serve people around me. That's what keeps me going for the most part.
It's really amazing, you know, when we're running our clinics and their students are there till, at Cedar Creek, we're there till 11, 11:30 at night before we close down. And I'll ask them, you guys have any exams coming up? Yeah, we've got one tomorrow. I said, you should have tried to get out here earlier. But, you know, when I was a medical student, we didn't have this opportunity to serve. And so the students are really taking full advantage of this opportunity. And they balance, they learn how to balance commitments. So just like you do in life with your family and work and your in your passions, they learn how to balance serving and studying and having exams coming up and family.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm really interested in learning some more about this. So I know we'll be on a break soon, but when we come back, I would really like to hear what is the process to try to get into medical school for those that might be interested in wanting to go into that? And what would be the process of getting into some of these groups? And then is there a cost? Do people like students have to pay or is this all covered for through some fundraising? So I'd like to know a little bit more if we can dive deeper into that when we return.
And not to quiz you, but what I would like to know more about too is like Latino health, right? You know, what are you seeing out in the community or what disparities are you seeing amongst the homeless population versus the international population that you serve? And as doctors, do you have any advice for us to be healthier? So we'll get into all of that right after this break and we'll be back in a minute. Welcome back to La Prensa Habla. I am Jessica Molina here with Dr. Linda Alvarado Arce and our two guests, Dr. Richard Pat and Athir Ammer. We have so many questions that we want to ask, so I'm going to hand it over to Dr. Linda Alvarado Arce so she can start firing away.
Well, I just want to follow up on what we kind of left off on the last episode is, what if somebody is interested in going to school, following a career path similar to what you're doing? How do they get involved on campus? If they want to do admissions, you know, what does that entail? Is there, you know, money behind it that they have to have? Give some people a little bit of information that, you know, some of the listeners might be, I have a child at home or I know somebody that might be interested. So what can you tell us?
Right. So the road to medical school is very tough. First, you do 4 years of undergraduate education. Now, some people have been trying out different majors, but I was a biology major. You just need to be on the pre-medical track. Then you apply for medical school at the end of your junior year going into your senior year of undergrad, and you go through an extensive application process. There's about 2 different applications, a primary and secondary, that you have to do. You also have to take the MCAT, which is a 7-hour long standardized exam. And then once you get into medical school, you do about 2 years of preclinical education and then 2 years of clinical education. And within that, it's really important to kind of delve deep into your interests and what you're passionate about. So for example, volunteering through community care clinics or going on a mission or even joining specialty interest groups like internal medicine club or family medicine club, whatever may interest that student. So it's actually pretty easy to get involved. I'll start with community care clinics. You have to complete a couple trainings through our online Blackboard site. And then once you do that, you can go in and kind of shadow underneath clinical students or more experienced preclinical students, kind of get your bearings and how you're going to volunteer. And then you're open to volunteer across all sites. You can sign up for all sites that are on the website. And yeah, it's been a great experience. Very easy to get involved in. It really accessible to all the students.
And what's the cost to go on the missions? Is there, like, do you have to bring money to the table? Is this all covered by fundraising that the groups do?
Right. So we actually get a scholarship after we've gone on the mission. I think it's $750 scholarship for first-time mission goers, and then it kind of decreases from there. But that's a great way for students who are kind of scared of the cost aspect to want to go on the mission. The rest would have to be covered by you, but I think that's a great incentive for people to come onto this mission and, you know, realize that they're not alone in coming up with that money by themselves.
So what's the total cost then?
This past mission was 2,000.
About 2,000.
Yeah.
We really try to keep the cost down because the cost for the students. We try to make it as cost friendly as possible, and that means flying sometimes Spirit Airlines and other places. But we've got a wonderful organization where they know what our goal is, and so they work with the hotels and everything else. The main cost is the flight. So.
Yeah.
We're heading down to Honduras April 11th. That's costing $970. But then the rest of the time, it's about $500 for the rest of the week to cover food, transportation, housing, and lodging, which is, and again, just like Athira said, there's a $750 scholarship that helps to defray that cost. This past January, we brought the most number of medical students and PA and healthcare students that we've ever brought on a mission, 38.
Wow.
Which was a lot of students.
Yeah.
In April, in Honduras, we'll have six medical students from Toledo. We'll have two pharmacy students. And we'll have two medical students from a medical school in Puerto Rico that I'm associated with.
Oh, nice.
I would imagine that these mission trips really have a lasting effect on all who go. I'm curious, what is a moment that sticks with you from your trips that you know, hold fondly that you will never forget?
So I would say just how welcoming and grateful the whole population is that we go to. For example, I found many times where I would explain over and over that this care is free. They don't need to give us any money, and they would just be so overjoyed and emotional that they would hug us, you know, express their sincerity, and they were just such welcoming people. It really reminded me of my own culture, giving back and helping different populations around the world. So I would say that's what makes the care so rewarding, is just seeing how much it's impacting those that we help, and makes me want to keep returning in the future.
That is so beautiful. And you say it makes you kind of like want to keep returning. And I think we have Dr. Pat here who, from the outside looking in, I feel like you make it happen so that you keep returning. So you have to have some moments that have been really lasting to you as well.
It's important to see the continuity of care. So when we go to Guatemala and Honduras and the Philippines, we try to go to the same place every time so we can make a dent in the healthcare of the area. So not only do we see, you know, 1,500, 2,000 patients during that week and take care of them, but we try to build up infrastructure. So in each of those sites, we train what we call health promoters. We'll take four or five villagers from each community. Their basic prerequisite is they can read and write, and they don't have any healthcare experience. But over the course of that week, we turn them into mini paramedics. So we teach them how to use a stethoscope, blood pressure cuff, check blood sugars. We teach them first aid, how to deliver babies, how to take care of malnutrition, diarrheal diseases. We leave them with a packet of medicine, supplies, equipment, training certificates, vests, that, and we, and so that the community now knows that they have somebody that they can turn to in case they need some basic health care. They realize they're not physicians or nurses, but they can at least start the health care process there. And then each year we go back and we retrain and resupply them. So that's the health promoter training program. We've done that across the world, in Haiti and Africa and Honduras and Guatemala. And then we also bring in a water filter program. So one of the main causes of illness is diarrheal diseases and everything that that entails, poor nutrition for the kids, so they don't do well in school, gross stunting, and overall poor health all over. So we bring in water filters. These water filters are We're bringing about 300 each mission, so into each community we'll distribute 50 water filters. The people in the communities decide who gets the water filters. We put them through a training program. Each water filter can provide 100,000 gallons of clean water, and it's portable, and the families can share it with other families in the area. Mm-hmm. And then the next year we bring in more water filters, so providing clean water, health education. Mm-hmm. On top of that, in a smaller number of people, we've been able to put them through nursing school, through medical school, to make a difference in that regard.
Mm-hmm. So we're in Honduras only because La Prensa, me, I was in Honduras on a mission just a couple weeks ago, and I did write about it in our paper as well. We're in Honduras is your missions?
We started going to Honduras after Hurricane Mitch hit. And that hurricane was a little bit different than any other hurricane. It sat over the country for a week and set the country back 50 years. Mm-hmm. The roads, the bridges mm-hmm. were destroyed. The people they had to rebury their dead in the cemeteries. And so City of Toledo asked me to bring the medical team in, and we said, well, we're just going to keep coming back and help the community. And there was no mandate to do that. It was just that we decided to keep going back. We started in Markovia. And then we went into Don Lee, and then we found a home base in La Esperanza up in the mountains of Intibucá. And there we work with the Lions Club.
That's our
home organization that helps to organize everything from our food, our lodging, the places that we pick mm-hmm. and go to. And so that's where we go now. And we started doing a little outreach missions in Roatán, which initially we went mm-hmm. there for R&R. But mm-hmm. then they asked us to start seeing people in the poorer communities around that mm-hmm. area, too. 2 years ago, the public hospital in Roatán totally burned down. Mm-hmm. So we help leave some medicine supplies equipment for that. Mm. In Guatemala, we bring teams up into San Lucas Toliman in the Lake Atitlan area. Mm. And we work in the communities, the villages, the rural villages in the mountains. So typically we work in the outlying communities. We don't work in cities per se or towns mm-hmm. per se that have health care, and we set up infrastructure and develop our programs there just because there's a larger need.
Yeah. I think something that really, well, everything about you is inspiring, but one of the things that I find even most inspiring is the fact that you do this locally as well. You know, it's almost like, yes, you take the mission trips and you go abroad and you help, but all the meanwhile, you're doing it back home in our own backyard. I'm curious, the infrastructure that you say that you help create overseas or in other countries, do you do similar infrastructure here with our community? Like, is there anything parallel to like the water filters or the training, the community leaders that you do here?
We started Community Care Free Medical Clinic after coming back from the Haiti disaster in 2010. Mm-hmm. And we said, let's do something in our own community. Mm-hmm. We started initially at Perrysburg Heights, which is a mm-hmm. largely a Latino population, underserved. Yeah. And when we were there initially, I think they had two people graduate over the last generation mm-hmm. from college. Mm-hmm. And so they had a wonderful community center there. Mm-hmm. And so that's where we started. And then we moved it over to Cedar Creek Church when that opportunity arose to utilize their entire church building. Mm-hmm. But one thing grew to another. I mean, we started bringing medical students involved, and when we were able to move to Cedar Creek Church, then we started our outreach programs. So just one thing started to another. Mm-hmm. We've always wanted to help the community care workers that we call them health promoters internationally. And to Flock, we've always tried to reach out to, what's the program called? The Homies program. Mm-hmm. So we've talked to them numerous times about helping them to become community health workers. Wow. Mercy Health has a community health program, actually, where they can get a free education mm-hmm. through that, through scholarships. And then afterwards, they go out into the community and they help their neighbors through the same type of program.
That's amazing. And for people who want to get involved in this type of work, maybe who aren't med students, how could they do that?
If you're interested in volunteering at the community care clinics, you can reach out to volunteers@utcommunitycare.org.
I find myself, I think I'm going to be emailing that. Every time I see you, Dr. Pat, I'm like, I need to do it. I need to do it. And the more I hear you, just the more my heart is there. And I'm sure that there are viewers and listeners who are thinking the same. So I wanted to make sure to ask that.
So when volunteers do go, what's their role in this?
Right. So if they're an undergraduate student, either from the University of Toledo or coming from a different school, they can do reception. So they can check in the patients as they come in, have them fill out the proper documentation. They can help with setup as well as tear down of the clinic. As medical students or other health disciplines like PA or pharmacy. Pharmacy works with the pharmacists that we have there to kind of gather the medications, provide patient education regarding that, and then medical students kind of go through the whole encounter with the patient, getting the history, doing the physical exam, and then speaking with Dr. Pat or one of the other providers to kind of get the whole picture of what the next steps are, the treatment plan, and what we're going to do for the patient. So it's a great opportunity for all age groups to kind of get more involved in the community in different ways, but it's meaningful in all ways.
Mm-hmm. And how do people get the word out in these, in all of these places? Who puts the word out? I mean, how do you do this? Because everybody doesn't have technology, you know, especially when you're in the rural. How are you getting the word out that we're here? We're, you know, we're going to be at this location. Are you at churches? Are you at community centers when you go?
Right. So we're at churches for the most part. And then we've also just become so involved with the community that it's now known across all of Toledo that, hey, we're going to be here and we're setting up every single week at this site. So they know that we're continuously there. We're showing up, whether it's -5 degrees, we're going to be there no matter what. So I think just broadening our outreach by the more people we tell, they're going to go tell their friends and their family members, and then the word will spread in that way. And then our volunteer recruitment chairs also do a really good job of spreading it out to the students at the University of Toledo, so they know that they can get the training done and then come and serve with us as well.
I'm so glad that you said -5 degrees, because it actually reminded me when I did volunteer, that was my role, was to stand outside in the -5 degree weather and help traffic, figure out where to park, help the elderly and over the ice and the snow. But it reminds me, like, as far as like the show goes or who's getting the work, it's about the med students, right? And it's about the practice that they can get, I would imagine, and of course also the people that you're serving. So I just wanted to put that plug out there that if community members are interested in helping, you know, you might not have the most glamorous role, but that's the part we play.
And you're able to just take over meds and stuff that doesn't get like checked, like, are you really bringing this? I'm just curious, you can, how does that work?
And locally at the Community Care Free Medical Clinic, we have a full pharmacy.
Oh.
And to each of our outreach, each of our outreach sites, we bring the full pharmacy with us.
Oh, nice.
And, yeah, so we have continuity care patients that need chronic blood pressure, diabetes medications, as well as infections, antibiotics. We try to take care of the entire gamut.
So somebody without insurance or just needing the assistance could go there and get their meds?
Yes.
Yeah, oh, that's awesome.
That's what we specialize in. It's totally free medical care. We feel it's a right to have medical care.
Yeah.
So anybody that needs it, please drop by.
Well, we are going to close up this segment, and when we come back, we're going to have a delicious treat. And that's probably the most appropriate time to ask, you know, what are the health disparities amongst our population, and maybe talk about some healthy things along with it.
Yeah.
So we'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to La Prensa Habla, segment 3, where we have a delicious treat. But first, let me reintroduce our guests. We have Dr. Richard Pat and Athier Ammer here. And then, of course, host Dr. Linda Alvarado Arce. Dr. Pat, tell us what you've dug into here today. What did we bring you?
Oh, I have a wonderful tres leches cake here. There's a little kiwi on the top, and I'm sure it's full of calories. And, There goes my Lenten fast.
Oh, no.
It looks amazing. The cake was brought to us from Telera's Bakery, which is located here in Toledo, Ohio at 558 East Broadway Street. It's a newer bakery. I think it's been open probably about a year. And it's been pretty nice to see that the whole Northwest Ohio has started to get lots more bakeries mm-hmm. in the area. And it was really nice. I asked her to bring just a few pieces. She brought a whole large cake filled with fruit all along the top because the Tres Leches is almost like a drunken cake. Or in some cultures, they may have a rum cake where you take a cake and you would soak it into some liquid. And in Tres Leches, they soak it in a milk. And it's made with Tres Leches, three different types of milks. So mm-hmm. that's the Tres Leches, always primarily given out during birthdays and holidays. And, you know, because it is very time consuming to make the Tres Leches. At times, people will even put fruit in the middle of the cake in between the layers. One of my favorite cakes, if I didn't have a gluten intolerant, if I didn't have celiac, I would be chowing that cake down because it looks amazing when you cut into it. You can just see the milk just seep out of it. It's, mm-hmm. you know, a very sweet condensed milk, but it is a very good milk.
It's
lots of calories.
Yep, condensed milk, evaporated milk, mm-hmm. and heavy cream. So yes. those are the tres leches that are inside of it. Have you had this type of cake before?
Yes, yes. In our Filipino community, we have similar.
Oh, really?
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
With the same types of milks. What's it called?
Tres Leches.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I tell because the influence. The yeah. Philippines were colonized by Spain, so they have lots of similarities. Yes. Yeah.
Wow. We were talking just amongst this table how many differences we have, not similarities, in our dietary restrictions. So right now at this table, we have gluten-free, we have fasting, and we have vegan, and then we all get to watch Dr. Pat enjoy the cake. But I am curious, from a health perspective, what are the benefits of fasting?
Mm-hmm. And what are the benefits to our salud, to our health?
Yes.
In that, because that is our word of the day as well, because it has multiple meanings. So we picked this word.
So the big one is intermittent fasting is a way that we use to lose weight. And you know, initially, I thought my diet was terrible because I never have breakfast, not eat lunch, and then just have dinner, and that'd be late. And now I find out that's actually a healthy diet.
Really?
They call it intermittent fasting.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Where you only eat between a certain period of time. And it improves the amount of weight loss. And it just kind of makes sense that you're less calories in and you're only keeping your calorie intake between a certain period of time. So less calories in, but being able to burn it off at the same time instead of eating late at night and then going to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
there is a health benefit to intermittent fasting that's well been proven.
Oh.
And overall, you know, losing weight is key in all aspects of health as long as you're not underweight.
I've thought too, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, let's say, you know, if I don't eat a couple hours before bed, that when I'm sleeping, instead of digesting, my body gets to tend to other things that might need to take place while sleep. So I've always felt like if I fast before bed, I actually get a much deeper sleep. But is there any truth to that, or am I just crazy?
If it works for you, that's great.
That's all
Jessica.
That matters.
Everybody's different.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was always told that you would want to eat breakfast because then you burn off your food throughout the day, you know, and then, of course, not eat late at night.
Yeah, the same scenario. I mean, it's just a way of bringing in more calories.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as you stay hydrated and you make sure that you have an adequate amount of calories and you're eating smart, you're less mm-hmm. less fatty foods, less processed foods, and
right.
Vegetables and fruits. Can't go wrong with doing things in moderation.
Yeah, and then sugars. Definitely no sugars. You know, like when I would travel to Ecuador actually had no refined sugars. You would go to bakeries and you would never find a cake like this in a bakery. You're beginning to see that in a little bit more now. But when you go more into the indigenous or the more remote areas, you will not find any sugars or any cakes like this, which is just amazing because as being Mexican in our Latino culture, we like to celebrate with cakes and pasteles and cookies and cupcakes and, you know, graham cracker.
Sugary drinks.
Yeah, sugary drinks, which I also brought, if anybody would like to try some of our Latino sodas. Yes, we're very sugar. Probably why we also, Latinos, have a high diabetes rates.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, tell us about our disparities. What do you see in our community, Dr. Pat?
In the Latino population, we do see higher incidences of hypertension as well as diabetes. Mm-hmm. And because those are risk factors for coronary artery disease, higher incidence of coronary artery disease, mental health issues that go along with that because of tending to keep things internalized. But at the same time, the Latino population has a very strong familial cultural background, mm-hmm. supporting each other. So there's an offset on that. Mm-hmm. But mainly hypertension and diabetes. We see people that work so hard in their daily lives and burning off calories, but the carbohydrate load is huge.
We got tortillas. We got rice, beans.
And
potatoes. We love our potatoes. Yeah. We do a lot of
many carbs.
When we find somebody with diabetes in our clinics and we tell them what kind of diet to stay away from, they said, all the food that I eat, I have to stay away from. Mm-hmm. Not stay away from, but limiting and getting in the exercise and monitoring your disease process with, we provide blood pressure cuffs, we provide glucometers, we provide the medications that they need for chronic health care. At our clinics, we provide 3 months of blood pressure and diabetes medications so they never run out. And still, sometimes they run out. Mm-hmm.
So what is a good strategy to make that sustainable? Because if you just tell me, you know, eat less, that might not be enough, you know, for the average person to take home and then actually put into action. So what are some, like, actionable strategies?
There's a lot of apps that you can use on your cell phones now, how many steps you're doing, how many calories you're eating, and pretty much, you know, keeping your salt level down, especially if you have hypertension. And, again, not totally staying away from carbohydrates because you can never do that, but making the right decisions. You know, fruit's probably better than candy. Making sure you stay hydrated and portion control. You know, I don't have to have my second helping at dinner every time, but if it's there, I'll eat it. I know that that's bad, but portion control. And because of that, cooking smarter. So my wife, thank goodness, now is also into this, and we're eating healthy. So there's always less carbs, but more and less refined foods.
Yeah.
What do you suggest someone's plate look like? Because I know that the plates have changed over time, right? Mm-hmm. There's like the U.S. plate, which has changed. There's Canada has one. I see Harvard has one. Mm-hmm. So what would you suggest?
Yeah. Following things in moderation, you don't have to stick to a pure equation. I don't think you have to do that. Mm-hmm. But making sure that, you know, less portions and making sure you stay hydrated with water, making sure you keep your alcohol content down, the refined, the sweets, the less processed foods overall. Mm-hmm.
Do you find one Latino group over another being more healthier or less healthier? And I say that because when I go to Ecuador, they don't eat tortillas, you know, flour tortillas. I go to Honduras, they don't have flour tortillas either. A lot of the countries have corn, or they use maíz to make, like, even arepas, the Venezuelans and the Colombians, or they'll smash a lot of roots, you know, and make masa with that. I always, maybe because I'm Mexican, I always think that we have, like, the worst diet, but I don't know. Are there, when you look at the Latinos overall, are there some Latinos that are, you know, their health worse than others?
I really haven't noticed that, now that you brought that up. What we find actually in the more rural communities than any place is the amount of chips that are available, the candies, the pop that's available. You know, at our during our missions, we bring dentists with us, and there's no restorative work. It's all extraction.
Oh, wow.
So kids, you know, these are now their permanent teeth that are being extracted just because of, well, poor dental health and not brushing, but also access to all of the candies and the sweets and the pop.
I didn't even think about that.
The processed foods.
Yeah.
But I didn't even think about that because when I go on missions or I go to other countries, I always take kids Hershey's and Milky Way because they love the American candies so much. Yeah. And they don't really get that. I mean, in Ecuador, I can go and get chocolate. I mean, it has no sugar. It's so good. It's like you would taste it and be like, oh, it's got sugar. But they really don't use any refined sugar in anything. It's just so remote. They don't have like Amazon or like mail that comes to your house.
Or corn syrup.
Yeah, they don't have corn syrup. They don't have anything. And their foods are very simplistic. It's very natural. It's only got a few ingredients ever in it. It's very, you know, and I have found that is, you know, better as well. But wow, now you're making me think about, I shouldn't be taking so many candy. I do. I'll take so much.
Oh,
the
boy.
Kids just like, I took Rice Krispie treats the other time. They're just like, oh, this is so cool. Right. Wow. I didn't even think that I'm actually
I think it's like addictive. It's like high savory, high sugary, high fat. And our bodies crave those things in certain ratios. But then when you get something that's processed, it's like ultra loaded with all of that stuff. So our taste buds, probably their taste buds are like, oof. Going crazy, and they love it.
Right. Now it's going to make me think about what should I also take books. But
do you have any suggestions on what Linda should take on her next mission trip?
I know. Now I'm like, wow, I should quit doing that. Well, you can't take fruit, and you can't take meat, you know. So it's like you can't travel and go over and take anything like that. So I've always just packed like a bunch of goodies.
But what we bring in, different organizations help us, various churches and youth groups, we call them health packs. So just in a gallon Ziploc bag, we'll have toothbrush, toothpaste, a bar of travel soap or shampoo, face towel, and we pass that out.
It'd be cute little brushes, you know, toothbrushes with cute little cartoons on them or something.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
It won't be as fun as candy.
A little candy's fine, but not a lot.
Oh, okay.
Athira, how do you find yourself and other med students staying healthy amongst the demands of your schedules?
Right. It's definitely been difficult. In the beginning, I thought that I just needed to stick to the books and do nothing else. But you find that if you do that, you burn out really fast. So I think the most important thing is just staying active. Like if you're involved in a sport or an extracurricular activity, something that you could, you know, maintain your physical health and mental health at the same time, because your medical school journey will be really taxing. Mm-hmm. So it's really important just to be active, you know, go for a run, go for a walk. That's the most important thing, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Do you notice that the places that you travel to, are their communities active? Do you encourage that type of exercise or physical activity?
I would say they're not as active. They are doing a lot of hard labor, you know, in their jobs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've listened to a lot of them say that they walked 5 miles back and forth to work each day. They're doing really intensive work. But at some point, I think there are certain things that they need to do beyond that in order to, like, strengthen their muscles and stay healthy in that way, because doing that much work doesn't always burn, like, the calories and keep them healthy.
Do you see a lot of babies? Do a lot of babies come to the clinic?
There were a lot that came both in Guatemala, and we see at the community care clinic sometimes too. And, you know, it's really amazing to see just the whole community coming together, bringing anyone they know, the youngest people in their family, the oldest people in their family, to kind of get that care and take the right steps towards getting better in their health. Yeah.
So are you going to volunteer with us when you graduate as well? Because you actually get to see the families growing. If they come as a small child, they get older, you're probably going to get attached. So you'll stay continuing to work on this?
I would love to. Yeah, I would love to come back, go on a mission again, and then also work with the same people. You know, I become so close to the people that I went on the mission with. I didn't know them coming into it, but now I can say that they're some of my closest friends. So I think just learning from all different disciplines, all different healthcare aspects and avenues is just so important to my growth, and I would love to come back and see that community grow and how they've improved over time.
That's so beautiful.
Yeah, and as we close up here, I do want to ask both of you before we go, what are you most excited about in the year ahead?
For us, it's continuing the mission, continuing the process that we started, giving our medical students an opportunity to serve, and them taking advantage of it, and seeing what else they have to offer. Mm-hmm. It's again, our community care-free medical clinic. It started as a small operation. We had no blueprint that we're going to expand this and add all these services, women's health care services, mm-hmm. pharmacy services, therapy, everything that's been available now. And so I'm interested to see what the next board is going to bring forth to the table, and looking for other opportunities to serve locally. We do get phone calls periodically. Could you bring your clinic to our pop-up event in the summer or the winter? Mm-hmm. There's a need here. So there's always a need locally, and if we can assist in any way, then we try to do that.
Yeah, it started so small, and now it's gotten so large, and you know, you bring somebody who's just, it's touched their lives, then it touches the lives of the people that you're serving as well. That's got to be extremely rewarding, and it's beautiful, and I thank you both. I thank the whole program for doing this, because it's so needed. It just is.
Yep, and that reminds me of going back to our word that you shared, salud. Mm-hmm. It means also cheers. Like, it means well-being and health. And then separately, you know, if you're like cheersing other people, you mm-hmm. say salud. So we have a lot of things to thank, actually, because our listeners may not know this, but this is our last episode. This has been
For this season.
This has been a 13-week journey, and this episode concludes our 13 weeks. I could not have thought of a better guest than Dr. Pat and his mm-hmm. medical clinic. It's always such a pleasure to reconnect with you. Yeah. WGTE, what a blessing it's been. Chris Pfeiffer has been here every episode. You don't get to see him. He's behind the cameras, but Chris has just been along this journey with us this whole 13 weeks. So thanks for putting up with us, Chris.
Yeah, and it's been such a great experience. People have really, really received the La Prensa Habla. I'm hearing people, you know, I want to be on the show, you know, it's expanded. Listeners I probably never even would have thought were listening. So this is just, it's been wonderful. It's been wonderful to have, you know, programs like the one that you're doing. And so people mm-hmm. can know what's going on over there and try to get involved in it as well. So yeah, it's our last, and that's why we're celebrating with Tres Leches. And, you know, we're celebrating salud to us, to this whole WGTE. And we hope that people start listening when we come back again for another season. Yes. So we look forward to that. But yes, it's going to be a little sad that we won't be coming here to do recordings for the rest, but we will look forward to it again.
And thank you again for being on the show. It's been a blessing.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
The Local Thread is a production of WGTE Public Media. Episodes can be heard weeknights at 7 on FM 91 or anytime at WGTE.org.
The views and opinions expressed in The Local Thread are those of the hosts of the program and its guests. They do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of WGTE Public Media.